stinks. I nod as tears slip down my cheek. Is the truth worth all this? I ask myself that question, and I think that maybe it isn't. Millie's life is at risk, and I could have prevented that. I wish I was back at the cottage packing to go home with Damien and the girls after having a lovely family holiday. Sobs come from deep inside as I imagine snuggling up with him in our bed at home, cuddling the girls as I tuck them in for the night. Yes. The woman stares into the dark sea. I can't keep this secret any longer. Rachel died. We loved her more than anything.
Mom!
Rachel cried. Why, Jess? I press her for more. It was an accident. When Kyle and I saw Jess with your father, we took our chances. Kyle took Jess. Then he took the boat back out immediately, while you were in the ice cream shop with your mother. And I took the car and met him along the coast. We transferred her into the car and into our lives, and everyone thought she was Rachel. I left Jess's red hat behind, and old Archie picked it up. While I was getting into my car, I saw Archie on the pier, holding the red hat before dropping it into the sea. We didn't plan it, you have to believe me. We didn't want Cody to believe that his dad had done such an awful thing, but we promised we'd keep his secret. Now I've lost two children. She shook her head and stared at Rachel. I fell in love with little Millie here, and I wanted to start all over again, be a mother and look after her. Millie needs me. She needs her sister and her father. Please, climb back over. If she falls into that sea, she'll die. If you love her like you say, you'll let her go. Rachel is sobbing so hard. The girl runs as fast as she can off the pier and into Bethany's arms. Jess is still alive. And Cody thought that Archie had accidentally killed her all those years ago. Rachel is Jess. I know that now. All these years, I thought she was dead. The look on Mary's face is deep. I need to keep her talking while I think. When she stops, she stares out to the sea in a way that makes my stomach lurch. What happened to Rachel?
Mummy!
Millie whimpers. A guttural roar escapes her lips, and her whole body shakes in a way that I've never seen before in a person. My heart bangs away, and another wave crashes over the side. My pain has gone. I'm too numb to feel. She wouldn't sleep. She cried and cried all night. It was because she was... Mary paused. She was poorly. I couldn't shut her up. The only way she'd stop crying was if she was in our bed. I'd had a couple of drinks. She slept and slept after I lay her next to me. We all slept, me, Kyle, and Rachel. Then she was... I'm sorry. So sorry. My heart was breaking. She had buried this truth, too. I know where this is going. I crushed her. I killed my baby, and only a day later, while Kyle and I were still working out what to do, Jess was there, like a gift from heaven. She was the answer to our prayers. We did nothing but love that baby with everything we had. I need to keep her talking. I can tell how much you love Rachel. Everyone can. What else can I say apart from, let my daughter go? Did you hit me in the cave? It doesn't matter, I understand why, I just need to know. My arms ache to hold Millie in them. Yes, I didn't know what else to do. I love Rachel. She's mine. And I knew you'd break my family up. I'm sorry. Why did this have to happen? We were happy. We were all happy until you came here. Glancing back, I see Damien standing midway along the pier, and the police begin to approach. I shake my hand at them. They have to go back, or this woman will jump, taking my child with her. They don't stop, and as Mary turns, I see the look of horror on her face as she pulls my little girl into the sea. Screaming, I stare for a moment, and all I see is Millie's red jumper crashing in the waves. Damien runs up to me, shouting my name, but I stand on the pier wall, and without hesitation, I throw off Laura's coat and dive into that sea, ready to die to save my daughter. The swirl drags me in and deep, and I feel like my breath has been pulled from my body. The icy fingers of the sea pull me in all directions, and I'm blind to my surroundings. With all I have, I flap and swim up. But where is up? Reaching around, I feel my way, trying to grab Millie's red jumper, but I get crashed against the wall, and it knocks the wind out of me as I'm thrown under once again. In my mind's eye, I see Damien, and as I close my eyes and succumb to my end, I imagine holding him tight and telling him how sorry I am. I lost this battle. I lost Millie and our baby. I lost my chance to get to know Jess. I love her so much, and I'm sorry for being jealous of her. It's my fault. Now it's time to let go. I can't fight the perilous sea any longer. I'm sorry. As I'm about to give up, my fingers brush on Millie's jumper, and we reach the surface. My daughter swam with all she had. All the time I spent in the pool teaching her, making her strong, had paid off. She needed me, of course, but she helped herself too. But she's weak now. I can do this. I'm a swimmer, a lifeguard, a teacher. I doubted myself because of fear, but I've already faced my worst fears. A rope dangles down. Reaching up, I grab it as I hold Millie. Another wave crashes me against the wall. I take the impact, saving my fragile little girl. Then I wrap that rope around her tightly and watch as she gets pulled up. Steps. I remember passing them as I ran down the pier. I swim with all I've got underneath the waves until I think I'm close. With chattering teeth, I stumble onto the first step and see Damien calling me from the top. He runs down and pulls me up the rest of the way. When I reach the top, I lie on my back, a shivering mess, staring up at the darkened sky. Rain begins to pelt, and I welcome it. I'm alive. I swallow it as it gathers in my mouth, and it quenches my thirst in a way water never has before. My salty lips are a reminder of what I've been through. Hurrying to sit up, I see that Millie is being wrapped in a foil blanket and led down the pier by a paramedic. Damien helps me stagger to her, and when I get there, I wrap my arms around her as we both shiver together. She's crying and scared, understandably. If I didn't have to be strong for her, I'd be sobbing like that too. PC Bickerford meets me with Rosie, and my other little girl throws her arms around me. In the distance, I see my dad, standing against the wall of the lifeboat station. He bows his head and turns to leave. Letting go of my girls, I start to run in his direction. He needs to know about Jess. As I reach the station, he turns on his engine and car lights. Then he's gone. 55. Kate. PC Bickerford comes over. Head over to the ambulance. I need you and the little one to get checked out before we speak. I wipe the tears from my eye. My father has gone, carrying the burden of the blame on his shoulders. I want to call him, but my phone doesn't have any battery. Damien doesn't have Dad's number. I have no way of contacting him to tell him about Jess. The moment I knew that Millie was missing, I knew how my father must have felt, and I can see why his drinking got worse and why he and Mum lost their zest for life. That could have been Damien and me. I'm thankful that my daughter is safe now. Thank you. Please tell me you found Natalie. The PC nods. We found her. She's been taken to hospital to sleep the tablets off, but she's fine. We've also picked up Mary's husband. He was trying to leave in his other car, and he got questioned at the roadblocks. There was an altercation, and he was arrested, and he did confess to taking you and Natalie, but he said no more. Damien helped Millie and Rosie into the ambulance, and I'm slightly relieved to see both of my girls smiling at the attention. Do you mind if we speak for a moment? I can't stop shivering. She nods to a paramedic who passes me one of those foil blankets. No, I'll let Millie get all the attention first. I can wait. Did they get Mary out? PC Bickerford shakes her head. They're searching now, but given the conditions, I can't see that she survived. I should hate her. She tried to kill my daughter. But all I can think about is the accidental death of their own baby, the real Rachel. In the throes of immediate grief, they saw Jess and never looked back. As far as I can see, they've never been cruel to Jess. They brought her up well and she seemed happy. I hate what Mary did and what she became, but I wish she were still alive to answer to everything. Can I just reel some things off? I'm a bit fuzzy and I don't feel that good. Of course, we can go through everything in more detail when you've had a rest and been checked over. Are you sure you're up to it? I want to talk. I was hit over the head early this morning outside Natalie's ice cream shop. Then I was thrown into the boot of a navy blue Citroen with some sort of sack over my head. And then I was forced to drink water that must have been drugged. I scrunch my brow as things got hazy for a while, and I'm struggling to recall the order of everything. I was taken to a lock-up. Then the driver came back and parked the car inside. At that point I was gagged and blindfolded, but I found a knife and managed to cut the rope around my wrists and ankles. I realize how badly my teeth are chattering as the PC tilts her head and squints to make out what I'm saying. The man who trapped me had to be Kyle. Do you want to know their secret? Mary told me. Yes, we still don't know why they did what they did. Natalie Thomas was found at the Penrose's workshop, but she hasn't spoken to us yet. What did Mary tell you? Rachel died as a baby. While I was at the end of the pier, Mary said that she rolled onto baby Rachel while she was in their bed. They woke up, and Rachel was dead. She and Kyle saw Jess that day when she was left with my father. One of them took her away in the boat immediately, while the other drove around the coast to meet the other. Jess became Rachel, and no one ever asked any questions. I can't remember who did what or exactly what Mary said. My thoughts are fuzzy. And then you received those messages? Yes. Why would Mary send those messages? She wouldn't want you to know what they'd done. I wrap the blanket tighter around my body as I stand under lamplight. I don't think she sent them. Someone else knew everything. Natalie overheard something. You'll have to ask her the details. Natalie wasn't my messenger. White-hot pain flashes through my head and my stomach is gargling. I feel awful, and all I want to do is go back to the cottage, pack, and then go home.
Mummy, your turn!
Millie enjoys being carried by Damien, and Rosie reaches up and holds her sister's hand. There's so much love between the two of them. I swallow back a tear. If only I was as caring towards Jess that day. We'll speak later. For now, get checked over. I nod and head over to Damien. What did they say? This little one has no water in her lungs. She swam like a pro, didn't you, Millie? Millie snuggles into his chest and buries her face. I'm so proud of you, sweetie. I lean in and kiss her. Then I bend over to kiss Rosie. I never want her to feel left out. About 15 minutes later, I've been checked over, and Millie and I are going to hospital. They want to know that all is okay with the baby, and they want to observe Millie for a while. Damien stands over me, a hand on my shoulder as we wait. I bite my nails while he frowns and placates the girls. I've only known about my pregnancy for a couple of days, and Damien has only known for a few hours. But both of us know that if anything has happened, we'll be heartbroken. If this little life has clung on through all that it's been through, it deserves a chance. Kate, I heard what happened. They've just let us moor the boat up. Cody stands outside the ambulance as we all wait. Oh, I'm sorry, this is a really bad time. Damien, can you and Rosie bring the car to the hospital while we go in the ambulance? He nods, understanding that I need a moment with Cody. Millie lies back on the bed and pulls the blankets over her while I sit at the end. The man I thought was behind all this deserves to know the truth about his father. Archie didn't hurt Jessica. All he did was find her red hat. You've been carrying that burden for years now. You can move on. Daisy spots her father talking to me and she runs over. Dad, are you okay? I can see he's not. I think your dad will need a stiff drink after this. Mary made him believe that his father killed a baby. Archie was a hero, and you both deserve to drink to that. He saved a toddler from a car and had nothing to do with what happened to Jess. This is the first time I've seen the man in front of me look sad and speechless. He holds a hand over his mouth. Thank you. Thank you so much. He grips my hand and presses his lips together. I need that drink, Daisy. Daisy smiles as she leads her father away. He glances back at me and waves. I've seen everyone now, and the only person I'm missing is Rachel. No doubt she will know of Kyle's arrest and Mary's death. She also knows about me. If I had the energy to stand, I'd walk straight out of this ambulance and find my little sister. But I need to know that my baby is okay. I wonder if it was all too much as she ran away from the pier. I swallow, wondering if she'll ever want to see me again. 56. Kate. Millie has had the all clear, but they're keeping me in for a few more hours. Things are looking good, but I have hypothermia. The shivering has been that bad. I feel as though I've torn ligaments. As soon as the adrenaline wore off, it hit me like a train. I don't know how Millie bounced back so quickly. I had to force Damien to leave in the end. If he'd had it his way, he and the girls would have been sleeping in that hospital chair next to my bed all night. He's left me a box of chocolates, which have been most welcome. Well, they would have been, had they not kept sticking in my throat. I yearn to speak to Rachel, but I can't. My phone has had it. Damien promised to get me a new battery, but I won't have it back until tomorrow. I need to know that Rachel doesn't hate me. The curtain around my bed flutters and I stare. Jess. Is Rachel. She fiddles with the ends of her pink hair. Rachel. I'm sorry it had to come out like this. I'm sorry about your mum and dad. I have to remember that Kyle and Mary are all she's known. My eyes tear up. It's been emotional, and my hormones are playing havoc with me. I never gave up on you, My bottom lip trembles. She steps in and throws her arms around me.
I knew it was you. It was me who sent the messages. I brought you here.
I pull away.
You're Will.
I was Will. Mum found out and saw the messages on my phone. I tried to warn you to leave, but then she deleted the profile. Rachel wiped a tear away. I found out she'd been messaging your phone and Instagram after that. I can't take it all in. I didn't think it would lead to this.
How did she get my number?
The cottage you're renting is ours. Your number was on the booking form.
How did you know that you might be Jess?
Tears stream down her face. She sits on the chair and leans back.
I found a baby photo marked up with my name. It was a photo of my mum holding a baby wearing only a nappy.
And? The baby she was holding had a birthmark on the back of her ankle.
I don't have a birthmark.
Then I found something in the attic. She reaches into her bag and pulls out a little ladybird with a strap and Velcro strips on the edges.
I saw that you posted a picture of Jess wearing one of these wrist rattles.
I must have had it on my wrist on the day I was taken.
Deep down, I've always felt that something wasn't right. I was led to believe that Archie accidentally killed Jess, that he was holding her and dropped her off the pier during one of his funny turns.
She paused and looked down. We were all told to keep it hush as the poor man was ill. I remember arguing with my mum about it in the beer garden a while ago. I kept telling her that Archie wouldn't have done that. I know he had that amnesia thing going on after the accident that confused him. The more Cody and my mother spoke to Archie about Jess, the more he believed he could have done it.
It's all a mess, and I don't know what to do.
That's what Natalie overheard. Rachel scrunches her brows. We'll take each day as it comes. Can I see you tomorrow? I realize I don't know my sister and she needs time to take everything in. However much I despise Mary and Kyle, they've been her parents for her whole life, and it's going to be impossible for her to let go of them. She'll also be mourning for Mary. She also knows now that her parents hurt me and Natalie. I don't know how she's going to process everything, but I hope that I will have the chance to get to know my sister. I haven't spent all these years and nearly lost my life for nothing.
I don't know.
She sniffs and wipes her nose.
I haven't stopped crying since I left the pier. Then the police told me that my mum...
I place my hand over hers. I understand. She doesn't respond. Instead, she stands and leaves. In the distance, I hear her let out a hiccuping sob and she's gone. I feel hollow. What I hoped to find was the truth. Now I have it. I've found my sister. She's alive. And I have a niece. I lived through the unimaginable. But all I want to do is cry. 57. Natalie. Natalie smiled, the kind of smile where a person still frowns.
Thank you for being here.
She sat on her settee as Laura passed her a cup of tea. A few hours in the hospital hadn't been a pleasure, but now it was all over. Laura had filled her in on everything.
I'm sorry I didn't answer my phone earlier, when you were trying to call. I was feeling miserable about my life, about everything, really.
Laura had helped Kate, and she'd been there for Natalie after the ordeal. The tablets that Kyle had forced Natalie to take had kept her in a deep sleep for a couple of hours.
I'm sorry too. Laura tilted her head. Why? I thought you might have taken Jess. She shook her head. I suppose when you found out that I tried to take Rachel in her pushchair, I mean Jess, I can see why you might have thought that. I'm sorry too. You don't need to be. She shrugged. No, maybe not. But I should have been more open with you. I should have known that I could trust you. With what? You know. Cody is Bethany's father. I owe it to Bethany to tell her the truth. She might hate me for a while, but I've seen what secrets can do to a person. She deserves to know everything. You're doing the right thing. I think so too. Laura, do you want to get out of this town and go on a girl's holiday when all this has blown over? I've never been on one of those, and I think we both need a getaway.
I'd love that.
As they sipped their tea, Natalie couldn't help but think about baby Rachel. No wonder Mary didn't want her to go on about seeing the DNA test results. Rachel didn't even have her DNA. Natalie swallowed. Everyone now knew the story. It had been rife on social media, and the search of Kyle and Mary's old garden in Polperro was causing a stir. Had there Rachel, the baby who got buried under a sleeping parent, been Alan's daughter? Maybe she'd never know. 58. Kate. Saturday, the 29th of October. We've moved to a bed and breakfast. As soon as Damien got back to the cottage with the girls, he couldn't bear to be in it, knowing that Kyle and Mary owned it. I'm glad I didn't have to stay there any longer. Too many memories. I finally managed to call my dad, to tell him the news, after Damien got me a new battery. But he was drunk. Again, I blame myself. All I want is my dad back in my life, which is why, when we get back, I'm going to help him to sort his life out. Things were said in the heat of the moment. I hope he sees that. He has us now, and I like to believe that he thinks we're worth making an effort for. In her own time, Rachel could go and see him if she wanted. I still call her Rachel, because that's what she wants. My phone rings and I answer immediately. Nadine, I'm out of hospital now. We'll be back home in a couple of days. That's okay. I wasn't checking to see when you'd be back at work. I wondered how you were. We were all worried when you messaged to say you were in hospital. How are you, lovely? I'm getting there. The baby is a tough little thing, but please don't tell work yet. I should be the one to tell them when I get back. My lips are sealed. It's your news to tell, but I'm really happy for you. Thank you. I pause. You okay? A little choke noise escapes me. Yes, it's all a lot to take in. Rachel hasn't really spoken to me since the hospital, and I wish she would. There's something she doesn't know, and if she did, she might hate me. I'm sure she wouldn't. When she went missing all those years ago, I hoped that she'd vanish. I was so jealous of her, I was almost glad when it all happened. That's horrible. I was a horrible child. I felt like the universe had answered my prayers when she went, but after, I thought I'd caused her to vanish because I'd wished for it. Kate, darling, you can't do this to yourself. That doesn't matter, so forget it. Most siblings get jealous when the new baby comes along. It's normal. I hated my brother for years, but now we get on great. I swear I thought similar things. Look how you fought for the truth all these years. You're a person who cares. You did it out of love. Yes, you were jealous, but you loved Jess more than anything, even going as far as nearly dying to find out what happened to her. If that isn't love, I don't know what is. You're the loveliest and kindest person I know, Kate. I mean, you save babies from the pool that aren't even drowning. Nadine lets out a slight laugh. I'm sobbing so hard I can barely reply.
I owe you so much.
Damien and the girls are approaching with a basket of petals. Damn it! You've got me bawling my eyes out already! Sorry, I have to go as reception calls and the boss is coming. Speak soon. I hang up. Shall we scatter those petals? The girls nod. They know that we're scattering them for a baby that died in the past who was called Rachel. I hoped my Rachel would turn up, but I can't see her. Laura and Natalie step towards me. I think of Natalie being trapped in that car and drugged for hours. My heart bangs as I wonder what Kyle and Mary were going to do with Natalie and me. We'll never know. I imagine they would have just escaped with Millie and left us to come around and escape the lockup. Kyle had pleaded guilty overnight to various charges relating to their dead baby, the taking of Jess, and the taking of Natalie and me. He blamed my assault in the cave on Mary. But they both planned it. I know they did. They both planned everything once they knew that Rachel knew the truth. Before we go home, we're heading to Polperro. I need to thank the lovely people who saved me a few days ago. And I owe the woman who works at the pub a hoodie. The police booked hers into evidence. We all take the walk together onto the pier, where we'll throw the pink rose petals into the water and spend a minute remembering baby Rachel. Millie grips my hand. I know this pier is a scary place for her after all that has happened. We talked about it this morning, and she said she wanted to say goodbye to the baby. The police are still looking for baby Rachel's body. They're searching a cottage just up from Willie Wilcox's cave, a place that my Rachel used to play in as a child with her friends. That's how my sister came up with the name she messaged me with. The Penroses used to live in Polperro when Jess was taken, in one of those beautiful hillside houses overlooking the sea. I stare along the pier, and in my mind, I still see Mary sitting with my daughter on the wall of that stormy pier, and I shiver. Mary's body was found a few hours later, and regardless of what she did, I'm sad for Rachel. Cody is already standing on the pier. He bows his head slightly as I approach, but he doesn't say anything. Daisy stands with Bethany, her arm linked in her friend's. I glance back. That's when I see Rachel approaching, her baby in a sling against her chest. She's trying to run, but the breeze is catching her skirt. One hand is holding it down, the other is dragging a baby-changing bag along. I'll just give her a hand. I run towards her and take the bag. Let me help. I'm so glad you came. She stops dead and without warning, she places an arm over me. Our faces meeting. Thank you for finding me, for coming. I'd do it all again to have you back in my life. I've always missed you, and I always loved you. Wet tears land on my neck as I hug my little sister. I stroke the baby's soft hair too. My niece. Who knows what the future holds or how things will pan out, but for the first time in years, I feel optimistic. I'm going to embrace everything life has to offer with Rachel, and I will be the strength she needs right now. We'll get through this, I promise. I've never asked what my little niece is called. Rachel tears up. Catherine. I tear up too. The young woman in front of me has lost everything she knows in pursuit of the truth. But I hope that gaining me was worth it. Nearly losing my life twice was worth everything to have her back. Thank you for coming back for me. I never gave up, and I'd do it all again. I hug my little sister. The girls hurry over, and Millie shyly grins.
Auntie Jess, can I see the baby?
My sister nods and crouches down, letting the girls have a peek at sleeping Catherine. Girls, it's Rachel. Rachel shakes her head.
It's okay. They can call me Jess.
Only them, though, because they're my special little nieces. She beams a huge grin at them, and I know they like her, and they'll soon love her like I do. I finally feel like my family is complete. Except Dad. A person can't have everything, so I have to count my blessings. Epilogue. Kate. June the following year. Our home is decorated in banners and bunting, and the food is laid out on the large kitchen table. I place the last plate of cakes down and throw open the bifold doors. No longer is the garden nothing but a stretch of patchy grass with a broken playhouse at the end. We have a new patio and furniture. I'm happy that we're ready for our guests. My stomach flutters as I play with my mum bracelet. I've called Rachel a lot, and I'm thrilled that she's finally coming to stay with us. The girls can't wait to play with little Catherine, who's now walking. I also can't wait for her to meet baby Jesse. He has our nose. I'm sure of it. Damien comes in, holding the sleeping baby.
I just called Mum. The girls are having too much of a good time at the park, so they're going to be a little late.
Yes, I now let the girls spend time with family and friends, and it feels wonderful. A year ago, Damien's mum wouldn't have even had the girls on her own because of me. But now she takes them to the park a lot. They've been to her house to make cakes when I was working, and they loved it. I've changed so much, and Damien is much happier too. I don't think he'll ever totally forgive me for putting myself and unborn Jesse in so much danger. But he loves me, and he knows why I had to do it. For once, I feel as though we are stronger than ever. There is one lie that I need to clear up. Now might not be the best time, but it's the right time for me. Damien. What? He smiles. There's something I need to tell you. He frowns and swallows. What have you been up to now? Nothing, I promise. You know, last year, before Lou. He nods. I didn't save a baby. I jumped into the pool and saved a perfectly safe baby because I misread the whole situation and my boss gave me a warning. He held his breath. And that's it? I nod. That's it. Come here. He pulls me close and kisses me on the forehead. Jesse begins to stir. There is a knock at the door. I brush the icing dust off my summer dress and hurry to open it. Nadine! I hug her. We've become best friends over the past few months, and I don't know what I would have done without her being my sounding board through all this. She's comforted me while I've cried. She's picked me up with afternoon teas and pub lunches. When my maternity leave is up, I can't wait to go back to work and spend my lunch breaks eating cake and joking around with her. I brought you wine. If anyone needs a glass, you do, my lovely. And I can drink it, I laugh, pointing at my little post-baby paunch. I rarely drink, but today I will enjoy a glass with my family and friends while we celebrate Jessie's safe arrival. A host of others turn up. Damien's work colleagues, some of mine, our friends from past and present. Damien's extended family and their families. The garden is filling up, and I'm thrilled that the sun is shining. Nadine laughs like a machine gun as she flirts with Damien's right-hand colleague, Danny. It's a joy to watch. The girls hurry through the door with Damien's mum, and they instantly drag her to the garden to join in with the fun.
It was kind of her to take them out while Damien and I set everything up. Little Jessie can be a handful, but I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm getting seriously nervous now. There's been no sign of Rachel, Natalie, and Laura. They said they were coming, and they haven't sent me a message saying they'll be late. I check the time. It's only 20 minutes. They're not coming. It's all too much for them. I also check the message I sent to my dad. When we got back from Lou, I found a broken man, drunk on both vodka and self-pity. I know he's working hard to stay sober again, but something inside tells me he's slipped. He hasn't called me with a progress update, and I haven't been able to help him as much after just having Jessie. He's never met his long-lost daughter in person, and I'm upset he didn't reply to my invite. "Kate, everyone's wondering why you're not out there enjoying the party." Damien places his arm around me. "I'm just waiting for Rachel." He gave me one of his pressed-lip smiles, one that tells me he's sorry for me. Maybe she's had an emergency. Or second thoughts. "No, love. It's a lot to take in. She's had a hard few months with losing the woman she knew to be her mother. Kyle is in prison. She's lost a lot, too. Finding the body must have been hard for her." They eventually found the bones of a baby buried in the woodland next to Archie's nursing home after Kyle confessed to burying his baby there. I haven't said too much about it to Rachel, as I don't want to upset her. You're right. Maybe this was too much. Finding out that the baby was murdered is something else. It's a lot for her to process. I agree with him and hug him close. Kyle had cracked and also told the police that he had lost his temper with the little one in a fit of drunken rage after Mary told him that she'd given birth to Alan's baby. The bones don't lie, and they back up his story. I guess that he told all because he couldn't live with his crime anymore. And I wonder if Mary believed her version of events because it was easier to digest. An engine hums as a large people carrier pulls up onto the drive. Natalie and Laura get out of the front seats. Then she opens the back where Bethany, Rachel, and baby Catherine all get out. I shriek with joy as I let go of Damien and throw the front door open. We all hug and kiss before I lead them through to the garden. After introductions, they relax and join in the party. I hurry over to Rachel. "I was so worried you weren't coming," she smiled. "I had to stop and change a nappy. Then we had a flat on the motorway of all places." "I'm so happy you're here." I take Jessie off Damien. "Meet your nephew, Jessie." She places Catherine down on the floor, and the little girl toddles over to Bethany. "Can I hold him?" I pass my little one over to his auntie, and she stares at him like he's a shiny jewel. "Oh, he's a beauty. Hello, Jessie." She sits on the floor and calls Catherine back over. "Come over here, Cat, and meet your baby cousin." The toddler smiles and sits next to her on the grass while I hold Damien's hand. He squeezes it. "Do you want a glass of wine now?" I nod. "More than anything. My dad isn't coming." Natalie comes over to me, a bottle of cider in her hand. The frown lines in her forehead run deep. "Are you okay?" She half smiles, but that smile soon went as she shook her head. "I know you heard about Rachel being my late husband's baby." She went silent. "Yes, I'm sorry. I hate that man for what he did to me. He had an affair that lasted over 25 years, and I was in the dark. How does a person do that? I can never forgive him, not even now he's dead. But that baby didn't deserve to die like that.
and I know if Alan was alive, he'd be heartbroken at this news. Natalie glances at Jesse, who is lying on his back on a blanket while everyone fusses over him. Mary knew all along. I've been sobbing my heart out since I heard. I wasn't going to come, but Laura said it would be good for me. I don't know what I'd do without her. I don't know what to say, so I lean in and hug her hard. She's a victim in all this, too. There's nothing I can say that will make the pain go away, I say to her. But you have a good friend there, and I bet you get on with Bethany, too. You have good people around you. Thank you. I know. She shakes her head and exhales. Bethany and I have become quite close. She fell out with her mother for a while when Laura told her that Cody was her father. But they're close again now. Cody is slowly coming around, and Daisy has accepted she has a half-sister. It's been hard on her, but telling the truth is the right thing to do. I have faith that everything will work out. I've never thanked you properly. I just wanted you to know how I appreciated the things you did for me. I know you doubted that you should help at times, but you did, and you risked your life. It means everything. I'm tearing up now. We helped each other. Right, I need another drink before I blub. She walks off, leaving me alone. I smile across at Rachel. Hey, Rachel! She comes over. I'm sorry that Dad hasn't turned up. You did warn me. I have some photos to show you later of Mum. I swallow. It must have been tough on you all. It was. I take in her long pink hair and her high cheekbones. It's hard to marry what I see in front of me with the baby at the harbour side. I catch Damien staring at the path alongside the house. I move to see what he's looking at. And my dad stands there, hunched over in a crumpled shirt, holding two boxes of chocolates. As he comes forward a little, he looks at Rachel. I've shown him a photo of her. Is that our dad? Rachel squints and holds her hand above her eyes to block the sun. I nod. A tear slips down my dad's cheek as he takes her in. I run over and hold his hand, leading him towards her. Rachel, this is Harry, your dad. He's not perfect by any means, but he's ours. Who knows? Maybe we can all heal each other. Or maybe I'm just being idealistic. Either way, I'm prepared to give it a go, if he and Rachel are. Damien grips my hand. I have my rock by my side. I have my sister, my children, my dad, and my friends. My family is now complete. That's all a person really needs. The rest will fall into place. If you were hooked on Find Me, check out The Next Girl by best-selling crime writer Carla Kovach. Continue listening for an extract. Available in audio now.
Prologue. Saturday, 14th of December, 2013. Same height, same hair colour. She could almost pass for Deborah from behind. But as the woman turned, he could tell she was no more than a cheap imitation. Her leggings were riding up between her butt cheeks, and she was wearing a short, puffy jacket and spiky heels, further going to prove she was no Debbie. His Debbie wouldn't be seen out looking this trashy. She looked up and down the main hill through the town centre before walking over to his car. He pointed to the right and pulled over beside the chip shop, past the busy bar. Redditch was certainly alive with people, all partying the night away in the run-up to Christmas. She dutifully followed, as if in a money-induced trance. Or was it drugs? He'd only ever come looking for company once before, but it had been a disaster, and long before Debbie had entered his life. He'd only wanted to talk, but that woman had been corruptive, trying to encourage him to do things his mother would never approve of. He'd been willing up to a point, and that point was his release. She couldn't have it. The woman tapped on the window and winked as she spoke in an Eastern European accent. Where was she from, he wondered. Romania, maybe? Or Bulgaria? Now she was close, he could see her dark roots and the slight wonkiness of a nose that he guessed had once been broken. She wasn't his Debbie, but he could pretend. The woman smiled. Looking for something special to end the evening? She asked. He glanced in the wing mirror and noticed a group of drunken revelers jokingly pushing and shoving at the entrance to the bar, not one of them taking any notice of what was going on just down the road. As they shivered in their short-sleeved shirts and Santa hats, he turned his attention back to the woman.
Well, I haven't got all night, mister. It's cold out here.
She exhaled a stream of white mist into the icy air and began shuffling on the spot to keep warm.
Get in. You know how to treat women. It's good job I know how to treat a man.
She licked her teeth and stared into his eyes. He looked away.
First, you show me the cash, and after, I get in.
The woman stumbled alongside the car, banging into it as she made her way around. She opened the passenger door and leaned in.
Cash first, mister.
He took his wallet from the center console and held up 2 £10 notes.
Cheap. But I can work with. Don't expect brilliant.
She filled his airways with the smell of cheap perfume as she fell into the car, snatching the cash as she landed on the seat.
Okay. Not too far. I need to go somewhere quiet. Can we go for a walk? Like a date?
Quiet is good. You didn't expect me to seat you here, did you?
Of course not.
He placed the car into gear and began to drive. See to him. That's all she was going to do. He wanted so much more. He needed to talk, to think, to feel something, anything. His mind was awhir with what his mother would say.
Going with dirty girls makes you a dirty boy. My boy is better than that.
Take a left, just down there. There's quiet car park, by the chemist. Pull in there.
He began to tremble as he passed the illuminated fountain and took a left as instructed. The road was still too public. 3 women wearing reindeer antlers staggered past. It wasn't right. He needed to be somewhere else, somewhere peaceful where they wouldn't be disturbed. Maybe where he walked their dog, Rosie, along the river, up by the locks of Marcliffe, just past Bidford. His heart quickened as he passed the chemist and put his foot down to reach the ring road.
Stop! Pull over! The woman said. Where the hell are you taking me? Stop!
He did an emergency stop at the side of the road, trembling as the car jerked.
Have I done wrong? You drive too far. I say the chemist, and you do this?
The woman opened the door.
Wait. I just want some company, that's all. I've had a bad day. You see, my mother died today, and I don't want to be alone. I have no one else.
In his mind, at least, his mother was dead. Since her diagnosis, she'd been walking around like a carbon copy of her former self. He shivered. He'd just told this woman that his mother had died today. What kind of person did that make him?
Sorry, Ma,
he whispered.
I'm sorry. Must be hard for you.
He stared into the lamplight ahead without blinking. Just a little longer, and there might be a tear. As predicted, his eyes watered. He sniffed and wiped his eye on his sleeve.
I miss her. Please don't leave me alone.
He was too good, Tears were now falling, one after another. Even his nose began to fill up as he inhaled the frosty air.
Look, I will come for drive, but you must pay me now, and I want to be back here in a couple of hours. I know you're upset, but I am not head doctor. 200, and I am yours. I give you distraction, or you can talk. I listen. Whatever you want.
Thank you.
He took her cold, bony hand and kissed it.
Thank you for being so kind.
Money?
She held her shaky hand out as he opened his wallet.
Half now, half after.
She nodded as he passed £100 to her. She folded the notes up and zipped them into her pocket.
Deal. 2 hours.
She reached into her other pocket and pulled out a pill.
Do you want one? £10 and we both have good time.
No, but you go ahead.
The woman tossed the pill to the back of her throat, head twitching as she leaned her neck back and swallowed it whole. Closing the passenger door, she rested back into the seat and closed her eyes as he drove out of the town, heading along the Alcester Highway towards Warwickshire. A few miles past the small industrial town of Cleevesford was his destination. Marcliffe, to be exact. It was 1 in the morning. He had until 3. They would walk, he could talk, and then he would drop her back.
You could drop her back now. Do the right thing, he thought.
His heart fluttered as he glanced over at her. There was only him and the sleeping whore in the car.
Are we there yet?
The woman stirred as she wiped a trail of saliva from the corner of her mouth.
Nearly,
he said, as he put his foot down, weaving through the country lanes. As he pulled up alongside the river, he watched her sleeping. Maybe it was the warmth of the car, the hum of the engine, or whatever was in the pill she had taken. The fields stretched ahead for miles, and except for the light of the moon, there was nothing but darkness. He opened the door, and the woman stirred. She smiled and leaned closer to him, massaging his groin over his corduroys. He leaned back, allowing her to unzip and stroke him. He felt himself harden as she released him from his clothing and expertly placed a condom over his penis. She leaned down to take him in her mouth. He wrenched her hair.
Ouch! Tosser!
Not that. Don't do that.
He paused, listening to the blood coursing through his temples.
Bitch! Take me back now! Call me bitch! Grab me like that! Weirdo! That's what you are! You bloody weirdo!
He gasped for breath, wanting to shout, to scream, to smash the dashboard up into hundreds of tiny pieces. He wasn't a weirdo. He was just confused. Why couldn't he be here with Debbie instead of this cheap whore?
Take me back. What are you, deaf?
Sorry, I didn't mean to hurt you. You just caught me wrong and made me jump. You hurt me.
He forced a smile.
Please, can we start again?
She looked at him and sighed.
Could you just touch me with your hands?
He removed the condom and dropped it by his feet.
Whatever, but don't grab me again.
Sorry. I'm truly sorry.
As she continued to caress him with her warm hands, he closed his eyes and thought of Debbie. In his fantasy, the candles always glistened in the background. They were in the barn, and they'd just had dinner. She walked towards him and slipped off her dress to reveal her naked body. Her nipples glistened in the candlelight as she bent over on the sofa with her legs apart, begging him to take her. He kissed the small of her back as he slapped her buttocks. He couldn't wait any longer. He needed to be in her. As he thrusted back and forth, his desire heightened. Almost there.
Come on, you do it. Just do it, mister, the woman said, as she stroked him vigorously.
What? What the... Stop! Stupid whore! Get off me!
He shouted, as he pulled away and gasped for air.
I'm so sorry, Debbie! So sorry!
He stumbled out of the car and zipped his trousers up, taking the keys with him.
Prick!
She shouted. He'd betrayed Debbie, the only woman he'd ever loved.
Stupid, stupid, stupid!
He said, as he paced the riverbank and slapped himself across the head. What if Debbie were to ever find out what a dirty man he'd been? The sound of the River Avon gushing through the weir brought him back to the situation in hand. He realized he was shivering to the point his muscles were in pain. Cold. It was so cold. The woman staggered over to him and lit a cigarette.
You want Puff to calm the hell down?
Then you take me back, and don't forget my other 100. I think I bloody well earned it with you.
He shook his head. Was she mocking him, and his inability to respond to her charms? He detected a grin on her face. Was the grin aimed at him? They walked until they reached the lock. He stared into the calmness of the water. Then his gaze darted across to the violent gushing of the weir next to it. He shook his head again.
What have I done? What the hell have I done?
He continued pacing. A curl of the woman's cigarette smoke filled his nostrils. Along with his churning stomach, it made him want to spew. He watched as she walked over the lock's bridge, staring at the water below. He couldn't let her tell anyone. If Debbie ever found out... He shuddered. It wasn't going to happen. She turned as he reached her.
By the time you take me back, will be 2 hours.
She dropped her cigarette into the water and started walking back down, almost tripping over the stones on the pathway. As she turned, he gripped her arms.
Please, let go of me,
she said, her eyes glassy. When he didn't, she began to struggle.
Let me go,
she yelled, as she tried to grab his face and poke at his eyes. He forced her back towards the bridge, and then, with what seemed like no effort at all, he pushed her slight frame into the ice-cold water below. He listened as her body cracked the thin layer of ice coating the top of the water. With a head-first, 15-foot drop into freezing cold water, she wouldn't stand a chance. He watched as she gasped for air, her voice echoing in the lock.
I can't swim! Help!
She gagged on a mouthful of water. He stared down and caught her distorted features as the moonlight lit up one side of her pained face. His heart was beating so fast he was sure he'd have a heart attack. Then the splashing finally stopped. 10 minutes he waited. There had been no noise, no more thrashing, and no shouting.
I'm so sorry, Debbie. I love you, and I'm so, so sorry I betrayed you.
He frantically searched around, making sure he was alone, and hurried back to the car. The passenger door was still open. He leaned in to tidy the seatbelt, which had snagged around the chair, and noticed a driver's license in the footwell. She was Romanian. Nicoleta Iliescu was only 24 years old. He stroked the outline of her photo on the small card. He was right. She wasn't Debbie. What had he been thinking? He took a duster from the glove box and began wiping down the passenger seat. Her perfume still hung in the air, making him gag. Although he could barely feel his fingers, he knew he'd have to leave the window open while driving home to get rid of the stench. He walked down to the riverbank and went to throw the card, then hesitated. He'd touched it. Would his fingerprints stay on it if it were immersed in water? He rubbed it against his trousers and held it with the tip of his fingers. Placing it in his pocket, he decided that disposing of it now was too risky. If the body were found, they might also find the card. Then they'd know who she was. Maybe she'd remain in the river until she was unidentifiable, but he wasn't going to leave any further evidence behind. Maybe, if they knew who she was, they'd know her whereabouts, where she lived. Maybe they'd have him picking her up on CCTV in Redditch. He couldn't take the risk. He'd take it with him, away from the scene. He gazed up and down, trying to spot her body. Nothing, except for a rustling in the bushes. He flinched, following the sound. Was it the breeze catching the bare branches? Was it just an animal? Foxes and badgers were common around these parts. The bushes opposite him rustled once more. His heart hammered against his ribcage. Had someone seen him?
"Who's there?"
he asked, in a quivery voice, as tears streamed down his face. He gasped until he almost passed out. Who'd seen him? A fox darted from the trees and ran off into the distance. An owl hooted, making him flinch. He ran as fast as he could, back to the car, almost slipping on an icy puddle. Mother would be awake soon. She'd need her breakfast, and the bread was in the car. He was going home. Then he was going to watch Debbie. Just another normal day.
This has been Find Me, written by Carla Kovac, narrated by Naomi Frederick. Copyright 2022 by Carla Kovac. Production copyright 2022 by Bookature, an imprint of Storyfire Limited. The moral right of the author has been asserted.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.